something other than a strange thing that happened there in Ezekiel, and strange things that happened over there in Revelation. God doesn't intend for it to be just a strange thing that we pass by. He intends for it to startle us, to stop, take a look at it, and have it in our mind from now on out. And to remember the things that it is signifying. To remember it. He wants us to know something about Himself and something that's going on in the realm of God's creation. He wants us to know the things that are going on out there. If you don't know the things that are going on around you, again, you don't make the right decisions. And you have a distorted perspective of things, don't you? So it's good to know what's going on. The main thing that we're seeing, God wants us to know, is that there's a war going on, and not to ever forget that. And He wants us to know the dimensions of that war. He wants us to know there is a spirit world out there. In fact, it's the primary reality. This physical aspect of things just occurs for a period of time, and then it goes away, and then it's going to be something other than this physical universe. And so we have to get the notion. It's exactly backwards than how we perceive it, you know. We're primarily physical, right? So man is body, soul, and spirit, but that's not how God presents him. He said he is a spirit, soul, and body. But we perceive it exactly with the wrong emphasis. The physical is the main emphasis to us right now, but in the overall view of things, once we begin to see how it is, we realize, no, that's not the primary perspective of this universe. That's not the way we have to perceive it if we're going to perceive it correctly. And then we're going to make some decisions that are based upon a more real picture of what's happening. And what happened was that somewhere along the line there was a war in which a certain creature, an angel by the name of Lucifer, the one of the highest order, has rebelled against God. And we discovered what he rebelled about. He wanted to put his throne above the stars of God. And the stars of God happen to be us. And therefore, he, in discovering God's plan and purpose in the creation of man and the operation of man and our status that God has planned for us, he wasn't willing to accept that. And the reason for it was his vanity. He had the most vanity of all because he was the angel of the highest order and highest office. And so, unfortunately, the better off we are as creatures, the more likely we are to rebel against God. Why? We don't perceive our need of God as much. So it's good for the Lord to kind of knock us down to size once in a while. It's helpful. David thought that. He said he thanked the Lord for breaking his bones, and I think he meant that in a literal and a typical sense, that he might learn his statutes. In other words, realize the value of what the principles that God has given us to live by, and those rules for the standards of life, that those things are really transcendent and remarkable and marvelous. David got all excited about the statutes of the Lord. He wrote an entire psalm on them. Or somebody did. But you know, when I study the law of God, and I've studied it with you and pondered it with you sometime, and do it every now and then, because it's something we need to always have before us and remind us and extend. Because those principles are remarkable, the principles that are expressed by the law of God to the principles of human well-being and the well-being of the universe. But Satan would rebel. He would stand against God. He would carry a group of angelic hosts with him. And that's basically the thrust of the situation that we came into as human creatures. And God used that to stimulate Adam through Eve and to be challenged and to place man into a position. Of course, I've always made this statement, so let's see, think about it a moment. God cannot create God. Now, that's an axiom. Because why? Because God's not a created creature. By definition, if you're created, you're not God. Huh? Huh? That's that geometry one. Okay. So, all He can create is creatures who are finite within themselves, right? And therefore, when He got through creating us, He said it was very good, because He doesn't create no, as we expressed. And so, when He got done, He had a creature who was capable, since they weren't finitely moral, and He created us with moral responsibility, moral capability of making a choice. We're capable of falling. We're not capable of living in eternity with God. Right? So how's He going to solve that problem? Redemption. Redemption occurs upon a fall. Man would fall. Angels would fall. They would have to make a decision somewhere along the line. A moral decision. Did they not? Well, here is a thesis that I hold. Now listen to this carefully, because it has to do with these beasts. They're angelic creatures is what they are. They're angelic creatures that are constructed for war. And that's obviously, they're in war. They're surrounding the throne of God. They're protecting it. They're in defense of the holiness of God, integrity of God's throne, right? How do I know that? Because I see the shadow of it on the earth with the armies of Israel gathered around, right? Why are they doing that? They're at war. They've gone over to occupy the promised land, right? They're there for war. He pulled them out of Egypt so they could go occupy the promised land. They're at war. And those creatures that are a shadow and a type of what's going on upstairs, up in the real realm, the primary realm around God, they were at war. They were equipped for war. They were aligned for war. They were trained for war. Am I right? And they were to keep out anything from the around the Holy of Holies, which represented the abode of God, symbolically. Are you with me now? So we know that. We know those creatures are creatures of war then. We know we're at war. And God has even brought us in as tools of this war. Right? Where would we find things specifically like that? Well, we find it in several places. But my favorite place and most succinct place is found in Ephesians chapter 6. Where it tells us we're not arrayed against flesh and blood. And that we are arrayed against flesh and blood. But He's telling us only. We're not just arrayed against flesh and blood. If you don't think we're arrayed against flesh and blood, just hang around a while. Or even our own flesh and blood. Ephesians chapter 5. Yes, chapter 6. I'm sorry. Did I say 5 a while ago? He says in verse 10, finally, my brethren... Finally, my brethren, here's the summation here. Be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. Now, we're going to find that that is no different than these beasts that we're seeing. These creatures, who are angelic creatures. As it is with us, so it is with them. We'll find that they're moving within the will and the power of God. And we're going to get a little sketch of these creatures here in a little bit. I think we have an illustration someone has set out there artistically. We're going to put one up of our own first, and then we're going to look at somebody else's artistic view of it. But the main thing I'm getting at is if we can see this issue of us at war and war machines, warring creatures, warriors for Christ, then we've got a subsystem of the whole. And if we see these creatures surrounding the throne of God, knowing that they are machines of warfare, or creatures of warfare, instruments of warfare, than we know, as we are, then we must understand we blend. As they are, we are. As we are, they are. And as it is here, so it is there. And they interact. We see it in instances where Daniel is praying, and he prays for a long time. And we find that finally an angel comes to him and says, I've been delayed 21 days by the prince of Persia. And then we find Moses, when he died, there was a struggle as to who was going to get the body. Satan would love to have that because he could have distorted the religious systems of the world remarkably by that body and the use of that, availability of that. There was a struggle because Moses was God's man. What happens now after his death with the corpse and the power that satanic creatures have to interfere with the minds of men? Ah, here's God's man. Here's what God's man wants. And just imagine how he would have carried and manipulated things all over the place. So there would be a struggle for that icon. And so he says, put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. Now, I'm not going to read through the rest of it. You do that for yourself. But after he says, for we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. High places. We now know how high, don't we? It extends right on to the covering cherub. What does it mean by that? That one that hovered over and protected and led the administration of the universe on behalf of the throne. Lucifer. That's how high. Have you all got that picture in your mind? We are involved in that. We are, I can't think of the term to use, but part and parcel of the whole. Not standing back of viewing it. We're part and parcel of it. He says, if you're not for me, you're against me. So we're a part and parcel of it, either at odds with the cross of Christ or in behalf of the cross of Christ. And the issue is, in your behalf. Isn't it astounding that we would work against ourselves by working against Satan and under the rationale that we are doing ourselves. We're wanting our way. We're wanting our benefit. We don't want to follow Christ because we'll lose out on stuff. How irrational when we see it properly, because He has said to him who does not want us to realize our potential and our status and our place, Satan. Christ has held up strong and said, no, I will defend and fight for these people, for these creatures, for this seed of Adam. I will struggle, I will sacrifice, and I will die for them that they might realize their benefits. And Satan, as he is so subtle, has persuaded us that a touch of this flower and a touch of that perfume and a touch of this thing is in our best interest. And we are damning ourselves. We're working against Him who has paid all and done all to redeem us so that we can shine as the stars in glory and set in the position that God longs out of His love to provide for us. And so that's the picture we must have. And here God is opening up heaven and says, look at this presentation. Look at the forces that are engaged in our cause in the highest of places. And I hope that the illustration we're going to see is covered in with a tint of crimson. I got to thinking, we have the verbal presentation of the Lamb and the projection of the Lamb in our lives, but when we look at the heavenly scene and see these creatures and all that surrounds it, it's in crimson. Now, it would be like coming into a room with the crimson lights overcasting everything and shading everything. That's the picture we would have in heaven. It says they came out of a cloud, and in the middle of it was something that glowed amber. What is amber? It's red, isn't it? Somebody said it going like this. In my understanding, amber is dominantly red. It can be really red, can it? Well, somebody's looking at me with more knowledge than I've got. Am I right or am I wrong? Brown? Gold? What's brown and gold put together? A what would be red?
E-M-B-E-R
would be red. Well, let's just see what they have put in that, if they've even considered that overview. Well, I do know this. Around the throne is red. Around the throne is red. So that would be there. But my sense of amber, it would be, I guess, different than many. But what would that look like? It's still bathed in red, isn't it? But it comes out of that cloud, that brightness of amber. And here it says, let's see, we're looking at chapter 6. Let's go to Ezekiel chapter 1 now. My main thesis here is that we have creatures that are part and parcel of us. Well, hey, if that's not red, brother Pat, if amber does not include red, then we're still the only ones that will reflect the testimony of the Lamb of God. And these creatures still are restricted to the lion and the what? The lion, the eagle, the man, and the ox. Those aspects of Christ are defended and presented in the lives of their ministry. Well, let's go down here and start looking at this again. We got their wings in chapter 8, and they had, chapter 1, verse 8, and they had the hands of a man under their wings on their foresides, and their forehead, their faces, and their wings. Now let's get up and take a look. We've got this started. It says, their wings were joined one to another. They turned not when they went. They went everyone straight forward. I get the notion that they don't... They've got a specific and great cause that they cannot come down or turn aside from. That's the implication of that. They are specifically and faithfully and in the most dedicated way determined to carry out what God has sent them to do. When they go to do it, they turn neither left or right. And their faces, we see those four that they had. And then verse 11, thus were their faces, and their wings were stretched upward. Two wings of every one were joined one to another, and two covered their bodies. And they went every one straight forward, whither the Spirit was to go, they went, and they tarried not, they went. So still, we're getting the notion of the book of Mark here to a degree, because the book of Mark has about 40 references to straightway and immediately. It's the notion of someone engaged diligently in carrying out a task. And so that's the picture we have here. That's what it reminds me of. As for the likeness of the living creatures, their appearance was like burning coals of fire. I guess that's where I got the reddish impression that I had. And like the appearance of lamps, it went up and down among the living creatures, and the fire was bright, and out of the fire went forth lightning. So, when you look at them, you see this coal moving around, like so, in their midst, and you see lightning or sparks coming out all over the place. Like 4th of July, perhaps. So here they are, just explosions and movement of fire and coals of fire and sparks as you look into the midst of this group of creatures. Now beheld the living creature, behold one wheel upon the earth by the living creature with his four faces. And what that's telling us is each of the four creatures had a wheel by it. The appearance of the wheels and their work was like under the color of beryl, which is beryllium, I believe. I'm certain of it because I looked that up. And I found out that it's some kind of a silicon compound, magnesium, and so forth. And what that would look like would be sparkless. It would sparkle. You've seen this kind of a compound, and it's got a lot of silicate faces on it. In all different directions. You shine light on it, it just flashes back, sparkling. Just a reflection of sparkling. As those wheels were there, and you saw them as they went around, they would be sparkling from the reflection of the light that's all around them. Then it says, and they four had one likeness. In other words, they all looked the same. And their appearance and their work was, as it were, a wheel in the middle of a wheel. So I had to think about that a while, but I'll point out what I think that is. When they went, or the impression I have, when they went upon their four sides. In other words, they went this way, this way, this way, and this way. They didn't go this way. They didn't go this way. They didn't go this way, this way. They went straight this way. They go this way. They were constrained, sort of like a mechanical device that wants to get over there. It has to go here. Then it has to go here to get there. It's like that. That's the impression I'm getting. You don't go like this. I don't get the peep by going like straight through here. I go here and here. Okay? All right, well, let's think about that a little while. Then it says, they went on their four sides, they turned out when they went. As for their rings, now rings means rims. We're talking about the rims of wheels. Were so high they were dreadful, meaning awesome. So these wheels are not 650, 250, 600, 14s or 16s. They're high, big wheels. Now, when I think of something that's going to roll, if it's going to roll to get there, and things get in the way, you want it high enough so that it comes down and knocks everything down instead of crawling up. Things like this, it's big. Big wheels. Going to run over everything. So that's kind of the impression I'm getting. Huge rims. It says awful, so that means they were awesome. And when the living creatures went, the wheels went by them. And when the living creatures were lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up. So these wheels are attached to these creatures. And whithersoever the Spirit was to go, they went. In other words, they were exactly tied to the direction of the Holy Spirit. Now, that's what we're supposed to be, isn't it? Aren't we? And thither was their Spirit to go, and the wheels were lifted up over against them, for the Spirit of the living creature was in the wheels. In other words, they were a part and parcel of these creatures. They weren't connected by bolts and so forth. They weren't riding in those wheels. They were actually a part of these creatures, an intrinsic part. It says, for the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. That was the principal essence of them. Like, I don't know where the spirit is, but I don't think it's my finger. That is something manipulated as a result of what's going on inside me. And that creature, that whole creature was manipulated by something that was going on in that wheel. In other words, if you want to say there was an energizer, or energizer of the operation of that system, it was in the wheels. Now it says, and when those went, these went, and when those stood, these stood, speaking of the wheels and the creatures, and when those were lifted up for the earth, the wheels were lifted up over against them, for the spirit of the living creature was in the wheels. I wanted to make that emphasis very strongly. Because as you look at this creature and just observing it, you might think that these creatures might have been riding in these wheels. And these wheels might have been moved by something outside or something. But no, this creature involves the wheels.
and the likeness of the firmament upon the heads of the living creatures, and the color of the terrible crystal stretched forth over their heads and under the firmament. In other words,
there is a space above it, above these things. In other words, you saw these creatures. My impression is these creatures are not small. They're huge. I don't know what it's going to show us, but they were huge, stretching very high. And when you look up, you saw a firmament or like a sky over them, some kind of a space. Under this firmament was the crystal stretched forth over their heads above, and under the firmament were their wings straight, the one toward the other. All right, their wings are straight, it says, the one toward the other. Everyone had two which covered on this side, and everyone had two which covered on that side their bodies. And when they went, I heard the noise of their wings like the noise of a great water, as the voice of the Almighty, the voice of speech, as the noise of a host. When they stood, they let down their wings. All right, now. All right. So their wings were going in some way that created huge noise. And whenever they let down, they let their wings down. Now, here's the way I've drawn this up. And I've drawn this up as a shadow of the Holy of Holies, of these surrounding the Holy of Holies, to protect it. Now, it said that they had two wings which touched. Now, I'm going to say a wing from this one came over and touched a wing from that one. A wing from this one came over and touched a wing from that one. And then a wing from this one came over and touched a wing from that one. And a wing from that one came over and touched a wing from that one. That's how that could work. In other words, they aren't lined out this way. They were in an array like this. Now, also it said that they had wings that covered every side of their body. That's one here, one here, one here, and one here. That's one here, one here, one here, and one here. One here, one here, one here, and one here. And they had one here, 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 and here. So there's one, two, three, four, five, six. Now that's the picture that I've had to come to. Now, I've looked at it quite a lot, and this is the impression I get. See, he did say, did he not, that they had one wing cover each side of their body? And they had two wings going over, touching the wings of another cherub? Okay. Now, I know that this is the Holy of Holies, and they're showing in the Ark of the Covenant, they show the wings spreading over the top from one cherub to the other, their wings. Now, the primary concept that I think is necessary when we think of the wings. We think wings, now I've said this before, that we think of them as little feathery things. Right? However, when the Lord spoke to Israel, there in Matthew chapter 23, He said, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you remember the, I've said this several times, it's getting to be very familiar to you. He said, if you would have only listened to me and received and accepted me, He said, I would have, what? Covered you as a hen covers her chicks. Now, when I think of a hen covering her chicks, I'm not thinking of I can pick up that hen like that. And I can do whatever I want to the chicks. So can a dog. They can do anything they want to the chicks. That just about everything can overcome a hen. So that wasn't a very much of a promise. Right? If we think of the wings in that way. But when we think of God overshadowing, putting us under His protective care, what are we thinking about? We're thinking about something an atomic bomb couldn't dislodge. Right? And we're talking about these wings overshadowing here. We have the image of something overshadowing or protecting, But we have to extend that notion to the powers almighty, not the weak, little fuzzy, fluffy wings, but God's arm. Now, I'll tell you something that will help you a little bit. We used to shoot at hawks that would come over our chicken houses when I was a kid. Chickens out here, and these hawks would gather around. I'd take a 22 and go, pew, and I'd hear it pop. You'd see that thing go up like that and fluff his wing a couple times and go on. A 22 bullet will not penetrate those feathers most of the time. I guess a big caliber rifle, but a 22, and it always shocked me. You know, that you could shoot them. You know you hear it because you hear it snap. We found out to shoot certain birds, you have to get behind them. So, actually, we want to think of wings then in terms of the sheltering provision of God that is powerful enough, a provision enough to hold out any force that should come into that region and attempt to penetrate into the area that is being protected. Are you with me? That's what we have to extend to. In other words, it would be like armor. Be more like an armor of a soldier, or armor of a tank, or armor of a Humvee. It would be like more like armor than... I don't have my watch. What time is it? 15. All right, well, I've got to stop. It'll be like armor. Now, we've read this. We've gone through it now. I ought to be able to just put it up next and go right on into the process of the wheels. But here's what I'm thinking here. You see that? This right here represents holding out everything that could penetrate into the throne. It's the covering of that region where the throne is. Are you all with me? And the body covering here, means that thing, these creatures responsible to hold that themselves are armored and sheltered. Are you with me? It's down like this. There, this way and this way. So the throne is sheltered, unless you can kill that or destroy that or overcome that which is doing the work of the sheltering. Those creatures are armored. So I'm seeing here in my mind a war machine now of armored provision and sheltering to protect the throne of God, to protect the whole issue and assure the whole issue of a positive outcome to God's purpose and plan for us. He has devised a war machine, a creature who is the Bible. When Joshua went out into the plains as they were going over into the Holy Land to survey things, who did he meet? It was the Lord of hosts. A warrior, you see. So we get a picture of God as one who devises a fortress, who devises a war machine, and who guards His throne. And now I'm going to leave you with the wheels. I'm going to put the wheels like this. Here, 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 and here. Now, probably these things would extend in a huge direction. But if this thing went this way, it was wings and wheels like this. When he got to where they were in this other dimension, then these wheels operated. So I'm seeing two wheels going this way and then two wheels taking it this way and so forth, along with the wings. The wings, I think, we would understand it would carry it up to here. And the wheels would carry it this way, this way. So I see these things that produce elevation, these things that produce X, Y, the X and Z planes and the Y plane are handled by the wings. At any rate, we see a thing that's designed to get anywhere that you want and a straight way, no roundaboutness, but straight way. And indicating tide directly to the heart and to the will of God, and equipped to war. Now, the wheel within wheels, we'll talk about that later. We'll get around to that.